Hey guys, my name is Mavi and I've spent the last 14 years in the plastic surgery and beauty industry, working alongside some of the best plastic surgeons in the country. Now I don't work for anybody, so I have unbiased opinions about hundreds of surgeons from across the world, and I can help you achieve the body of your dreams. Hey guys, do I have the show for you today? I told y'all in 2024 I was going to be bringing you back to the basics, and one of the questions that I get asked very often is, how do I lose weight for surgery? Do I need to lose weight for surgery? Am I at the right weight for surgery? And today I have a very special guest, Dr. Johnny Franco from Plastic Surgery Untold podcast, and we're going to go into complete detail how to get ready for surgery with weight loss. Thanks for being on the show, Dr. Franco.
Thanks for having me. This is super exciting because I don't think people get so excited about the surgery itself, but this is great that you're talking about how to prepare for it. You know, a lot of surgeons have wait lists, so there's time. And I tell people that time is actually precious because you want to be in your absolute best spot prior to your surgery. I always tell people the better shape you go into the surgery, the better you're going to come out, the better kind of picture you have and plan with your surgeon, the better your ultimate results are going to be. So I think this is fabulous.
So one of the things I see, Dr. Franco, I watch your IG and I see that you've been on your own weight loss journey. So you have kind of insider information. Why don't you tell us a little bit about how you did it and what your recommendations are for patients, for women who are looking to lose weight for surgery or really just new year, new me?
100%. I mean, I actually started my weight loss journey about 1 year ago, and I'm down about 85 pounds. I did I peaked at about 260 pounds, and now I'm down to about 170. So definitely been a journey and definitely a process. I'll back up a little bit. I mean, probably like most people that listen to your podcast and most people that are doing, you know, aesthetic surgery, we're probably super active growing up, did other different things. And at some point, life just got busy, whether it was kids, whether it was life, I mean, work, all sorts of different things and stuff just slipped away. And then I think during kind of the pandemic stuff, it slipped away even more for most of us that were wearing stretchy pants all the time and didn't even realize that stuff had blown up. And kind of like a lot of people, I had tried all sorts of different weight loss plans and different things. It was just kind of from a busy schedule, like most of your listeners, it was just hard to maintain. And so I actually had seen the New England Journal of Medicine article on some of the new medications, tirzepatide, semaglutide, and actually tried it on myself before bringing it to our practice. And so that's actually how I got it started. And then when we brought it to our practice, we actually did exactly what you're talking about. Our goal was to get everybody to an ideal weight prior to their surgery. And so the goal was we were just going to initially do the medications just for patients trying to get them to their goal weight prior to surgery. But we saw such benefits from this because not only in preparing our patients for surgery, but, and you probably have so many listeners, how many patients have had surgery, looked absolutely fabulous, unfortunately gained some weight in the past. They came back and it was like, oh, I think you need to lose a little weight, but there wasn't a lot to do for them. Now we could actually work with them and tell them, hey, let's get on a good plan. You may spend, you know, several hundred dollars, $1,000, but you're not going to spend $30,000 on repeating your surgery and getting to a great weight. And in the past, even some of the surgeries weren't great at treating the visceral, the internal fat. So pretty cool to be able to change it and really make an overall body change that we've never been able to do before.
That's amazing. I actually love hearing that. So you're using weight loss medications like the GLP-1s to help women who either need to get to their goal weight or have already had surgery are coming back after. I warn you guys, if you're listening and you know you've been listening to the show, what do I tell y'all? It's a slippery slope after surgery because you feel good and you feel like you're on top of the world, you're eating at whatever you want, and before you know it, oops, it's been 15 pounds. Here they are, magically. So now y'all are hearing it again from somebody else that's not me. It happens.
And when it comes back, because, you know, something, such a good point, you're born with a set number of fat cells in your body. And when you gain and lose weight, those cells get bigger and smaller. So it's one of the reasons I love fat transfer is we can control where we're going to gain and put weight. We can kind of sculpt and shape that body, you know, but if you don't take care of that, and let's say you just do lipo, you don't do any fat transfer, you still have fat cells that are going to get bigger. And this can be in your face. This can be in your legs. This can be internally, viscerally, so around your organs, something that we can't lipo or tummy tuck treat. And that gives you kind of that round belly. You know, in the old days, we used to call it a beer belly, but at this day and age, it can be breakfast tacos, it can be donuts, it can be, you know, you name it, whatever, Starbucks coffees, all these frappuccinos and fancy coffees. People don't realize how many sneaky calories they have. I was drinking 2 vanilla lattes a day, and there was 1,000, you know, non-healthy calories. And so I think super, super important about that.
I'm a vanilla latte drinker.
Yeah.
I just quit. I just went on strike. No more.
I think some of your point, though, is definitely so fabulous, because there's things that I've changed with my body with the weight loss that I've never been able to do before. I mean, things that the internal fat, some of the overall body framing, because if you really think about plastic surgery, and we call it liposculpting, it's truly sculpting. It's not a weight loss procedure. And so, you know, getting people to that ideal weight, those are the people who are going to look absolutely fabulous. That's the time when we can really do some incredible things, because there's a limit to how much you can lipo in one setting safely, limit to the amount of areas. I mean, nothing's more heartbreaking than we lipoed you. We just got to the limit and they're like, hey, you know, I still have a lot of extra fat I want to get rid of. And it's like, I agree. We just have to come back in 6 months because we could do what we could do. And so it's just an area where you can just get people such a better result. I mean, for most people, this is their dream. They've worked hard. They've saved often for this. And so anything we can do to get you the best possible result, I mean, it's heartbreak for you as a patient if you're unhappy, but it's heartbreak for us too. We want you to be happy. And so, you know, I think really great to really spend that time and effort ahead of time.
Dr. Franco, that leads me to a really interesting question that I get quite often, which is the BMI cutoff and, you know, the different ranges, how some surgeons cut you off at 28, other surgeons cut you off at 36. And it's such a wide range, and patients kind of, they don't really start to find out about surgeons' BMI limits until they're in the consultation process. They're like, oh, my BMI is 40. I didn't know. And I can't have surgery. So let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, there's definitely a huge range because of, depending on a surgeon's specific preference, definitely on the procedure itself. So there's a couple things, and we'll kind of dive into that a little bit. Definitely, you know, I think a good question, if you know you're on the upper end, even asking prior to the consultation, especially if there's a consultation fee. We used to not see patients if they were above a consultation, a BMI weight, because we didn't want people to waste their money. But now that we can get them on the weight loss journey, we're happy to see them, get them going, because a lot of people have struggled and know that, hey, my surgery may be scheduled out 9 months a year, but that's perfect timing because I want to lose 30, 40 pounds. And I'll tell you, the vast majority of us aren't in the 90 pounds like me. Most people are 20, 30 pounds, gets them to a pretty good weight. And that's super obtainable. I'll tell you, some of the big spectrum depends on people's specialties and what they do. So I think some people that specialize more in like paniculectomy and kind of bigger body contouring stuff tend to do a little bit higher BMI, but also definitely tend to counsel our patients. I think any plastic surgeon would agree, the higher the BMI, and for those that don't know, BMI is a body mass index. It's just a measurement, and like any measurement, it's kind of got its own variance, but basically, how much extra weight that you may be carrying for your body and what's ideal. Ideal, again, is an overall average, but still gives us a reference point. And so there's some really, really good studies that show once you get over 35, a BMI of 35, your risk of complications go up. You know, 35 tends to be a very, very common one. There are some surgeons that do 35 to 40, but they spend a lot of time counseling, also tend to break up the surgeries, probably not going to do a lot of multi-procedure specialties. I think a lot of docs that do a lot of high definition lipo, other stuff, tend to have a lower BMI because they're really, really harder to really accomplish in a good factor for people.
Hey, Dr. Franco, doesn't this also go along with the Caprini score? And figuring like a patient's Caprini score. I like to educate my audience as much as I can. So they, when they encounter things during their consultation or in their journey, they can be like, hey, I know about this. I heard about this before.
Yeah. Caprini score, for those that don't know, refers to basically it's a sort of questionnaire risk factor assessment for DVT blood clots. And it's been definitely a huge initiative, not only in plastic surgery, but just in surgery in general as a preventable cause of complications. Because a DVT blood clot is something that can cause, you know, real problems, especially if they go up into your heart and lungs. And so, you know, a couple of risk factors are definitely weight is a risk factor in terms of that. For a couple kind of weight in of itself definitely has some risk, but also tends to be the heavier you are, the longer the surgery is going to be, the more complicated, you know, the more challenging it's going to be to mobilize afterwards. So I think they kind of spirals into some of that. It's not the only factor in the Caprini. I mean, some of it is the surgery itself, tummy tuck, things like that have longer, the length of the surgery, your age, and then some kind of natural history stuff. But no question, all those things go into play. I think no question in our practice, I mean, some of the stuff, you know, the reason we've lowered our BMI is that we've gotten so many more requests for like high definition lipo, you know, multi procedures where people are now looking for kind of this, you know, we call it like Pilates bodies, where people are just looking for the super fit, you know, appearance stuff. And a lot of that tends to be maybe lipo, maybe fat transfer, tummy. But if you're doing these combo procedures, they're a little bit longer, you know, which is some of the risk factors you're talking about. So also, too, we've just found if we can get people's weight down, they tend to have less little complications. Most of us are super busy trying to get back into life, even if it's not a bad one. If you have a little wound here, a little something, it's still something that keeps us from absolutely loving our results. So I think that's some of the reason that we've changed our BMI. And slowly over my career, we've slowly decreased it, especially now that we can help you get to a good spot.
I love that, though. I love that y'all are helping them get to the goal, because that's something that is a very large obstacle for a lot of my listeners who are listening that are not at their ideal weight yet, or they're not at the weight that they can have surgery. But that leads me to a really, one of my questions that I get all the time, which is, which should I do first, tummy tuck or liposuction?
I think it really, really depends on your specific situation. I'll tell you, for most of our patients, unless it's a unique situation where they're just not going to have enough fat or something else for their BBL, I'm a big fan, and I feel like I'm in the minority of this, but I'm a big fan of doing the tummy tuck first. And the reason is for a couple. One, if you're using energy devices like a Baser, which helps break up some of that fat, I definitely think that you can sometimes cause a little bit of scar tissue, makes it harder to mobilize that tummy tuck. I think, two, there's always in patients who have done BBLs or lipo that needed a tummy tuck, those have been the people that have been disappointed, because a lot of times you may plan to be due with the second stage in 6 months, but unfortunately life and shit happens. And so sometimes it ends up being a year, two, 3 years, and they're not loving their body for that time. Where for most people, if you need a tummy tuck, you may not have your dream body, but at least getting rid of that extra skin and that stuff hanging down would make a huge difference for you. And then when we do the tummy tuck, and then we come back and do the BBL, now we've done stuff where we come back and we can do some of the high definition lipo to your tummy tuck flap. We can use that. You're already looking a great spot. We can be really thin out that flap and make it look absolutely fabulous. So, you know, for most people, and I say most because there are exceptions where I think it's better to do it the other direction. But in general, that's how I like to do it.
I actually agree. I agree with that the tummy tuck should be first and come back and do the liposuction all the way around. As I think we've talked about it on the show, but I like to talk about it now, is, you know, and you can go into detail about it, Dr. Franco, about not that you can't really do liposuction during a tummy tuck in the area where you're doing the tummy tuck. So like that area between your ribs, belly button up, that area can't really be liposuctioned. And if you can tell us a little bit more about why.
No, 100%. I mean, and there's some little bit of lipo, like you're alluding to, that you can do super cautiously, super minimal, can't be as aggressive as we are in other areas. So, and a lot of that has to do with the blood supply, just like with the BMI. I mean, you know, we all have patients, and I have patients that come in like, my friend got this lipo and didn't have a problem. It's like, I understand that, but there's a lot of patients that did, and they did have a really bad problem. And it's just, you know, you just really have to weigh those risks and benefits. And so just trying to do what we can that in the majority of people is going to be super, super safe. And so no question, there's a real limit. You can take some of the deep fat out, some of the superficial. Got to be super cautious about lipo overexcising in that area that you talked about, kind of that central portion, you know, right down the midline, you know, over the rib stuff, you know, things that right in the midline. So a lot of times we can still be super aggressive, the love handles, upper back, some of those other things, but front of the tummy, you got to be super careful.
Exactly. So if you're listening and you had a tummy tuck and you still feel like that area above your belly button is a little full, don't be mad at your plastic surgeon, because he was just doing what was safe for you and doing the right thing. I hear a lot, they're like, oh, they should have taken out more here, this is still thick. This is the reason why. Okay.
And that's also the point too, though. I think sometimes people forget, even with a tummy tuck, right? So you can have the diastasis where the muscles are separated. You can tighten those, but the more visceral fat, the deep fat that you can get rid of prior to surgery, the more your surgeon's going to be able to tighten those muscles, the flatter they're going to be able to get your tummy afterwards. So again, another reason to be as close to that goal weight ahead of time, because they're going to be able to do more during the time of surgery. I mean, no question, you know, I would still push you to lose it and get to a good spot afterwards, but why not do it before and let them tighten you as much as possible?
Absolutely. That's what I say. Get to your goal weight and then have the tummy tuck so they can really snatch you up as tight as they can now at your new weight. So Dr. Franco, that leads me to one of my questions that I always have, and I like to ask it two things. The first one is, are you team drain or team no drains?
Team no drain.
You're drainless?
Uh-huh.
Oh, man. You're my second one in a row that I ask that's team drainless.
I think you're going to see more and more and more and more people doing no drains. And a lot of that has to do with what you mentioned earlier, the DVT blood clots. There's such a push to get people up and mobilized so fast. It's just become such a movement. Again, not just through plastic surgery, but if you look at orthopedics, you look at heart surgeries, I mean, this movement to get people up and out and moving as fast as possible.
Wonderful. If you listen to the last episode I did on for the caretaker coaching, and I was telling your caretaker, remember, she has to get up and walk. What is your recommendation for getting up and walking after a tummy tuck? How often do you have them
walk? Well, yeah. Definitely one, no question, you know, make sure you kind of discuss that with your specific plastic surgeon. Mm-hmm. They should give you some recommendations. I'll tell you, at our practice, what we do is, one, we encourage everybody the night of surgery, they have to get up and walk at least 3 or 4 times that night. Two, by the next day, they should be walking 9 or 10 times at least. We send everybody actually home with compression device, the little portable SCDs for their tummy tuck or any surgery over 5 hours. And then we actually put all of our tummy tucks on blood thinners the next day after they've been seen for their post-op. What's kind of cool is a lot of people who had tummy tuck back in the day had to do some of the shots, but now there's actually some pill forms. And so they've made it so much easier. There's really no excuse why not to do it if your surgeon's prescribing it.
I love to hear that. So Dr. Franco, that leads me to my last question. Okay. So with massive weight loss, common things that I see is women who used to have a lot of junk in the trunk while they were heavier, they're losing weight. They're also losing their booty and they're also losing kind of that volume. So one of the things that I like to talk about, because I would see this in the office as a coordinator, when patients would have BBLs and the BBL was not what they thought it was going to be, but it's because there's so much volume or so much surface area that needs to be filled. And I feel like that's something we need to talk a little bit about. I haven't talked about it on the show, but I've recently had like 3 or 4 calls about this, about having a BBL after massive weight loss and not really seeing the results that they were expecting.
I'll tell you that's becoming a super, super challenging issue. And there's some people who we saw for consults, you know, a year or two ago and started some of the weight loss journey. Some of them had been with the GLP medications. Others have just been, you know, from healthy lifestyle changes. And there's some people who we've had to switch the plans and they're just not BBL candidates anymore because they don't have enough fat. Also, too, you know, I think the whole concept of a BBL has changed. We talk about a lot in our practice of kind of this modern BBL that's a little bit more athletic, where you're really looking at the skin, the cellulite, and some of those things, rather than just when we first started doing BBLs, we just want to transfer as much fat as we humanly possibly could, just because we could. And I think some of that has gone away for a more athletic look. And so, you know, the problem is if you have a, and if I always tell people, think about it from the old days when before we were doing like RF energy and all the other skin tightening device stuff, we were just filling people's faces with filler, you know, and people had these massive cheeks and stuff that just didn't natural. And then we were doing that to the butt. And so I think with the massive weight loss, it's really changed. And so we do a lot of skin tightening procedures, sometimes fat transfer, sometimes minimally invasive, whether it's a Renuvion or Body Tight, some RF energy, sometimes some microneedling. Softwave is another hot device recently. Some of our patients that really lose a lot of weight, we end up doing excisional surgeries like a circumferential lift or spiral lift, some of these things to really excise the skin and then come back and do some fat transfer. So we can do it in a stage procedure. Sometimes you can even do some turnover flap type stuff.
Auto flap. They've been asking me about that. They want to know.
Auto augmentation definitely is a little bit of a challenging procedure, but something that we've really started doing a lot more of recently just because of this specific stuff. People who want some augmentation, there are some fine points to making it look good and getting to a good spot. You really have to taper that flap. You really have to get it all the way down to the fold. Also, too, unfortunately, never gives people quite as much volume as they want. But I tell most of our patients, I mean, make the most of what you have. And so at least a little something, something's going to be better than nothing. And then even if we do come back and do some fat transfer, at least we're starting with something instead of nothing. But also too, the combination of taking out that extra skin and then doing that auto augmentation is pretty interesting and actually does pretty well for most patients. I'll give you guys a little insider tip of something probably coming in late 2024. There's already some clinical trials started at a couple of universities. We're probably going to be one here in early spring and then probably be widely available by the end of 24, if not in 25. A company out of the UK has actually developed this technology to really be able at high levels to be able to bank your fat. So we've actually been exploring liposuctioning people prior to their weight loss, banking that fat, saving it for them. And then when they hit their weight loss goals, then you could transfer that fat. They're starting at some of the big universities for reconstruction. We're hoping to be one of their first sites. We've been working with them to bring it into the aesthetic world and making it kind of cost effective. We're working on some of those treatment plan stuff. So keep an eye out, but definitely should be available in the next few months.
Wow, y'all heard it here? That sounds like an exclusive for sure. I can't wait to see the results.
It's super, super exciting. And it's actually going to be much more cost effective than people would think.
Yeah. I'm excited to see because that you guys, did y'all hear that? So they're going to be able to liposuction before you start your weight loss journey. So you have some fat to come back and re-transfer to wherever you need it. Once you're there at your weight loss, at your goal weight.
If you think about it, and you know, that's one example, but for people that want to do round two BBLs, things like that, I mean, imagine the cost savings for patients if you can, you know, because sometimes you lipo much more fat than you can put in. There's a limit to how much you can put in the butt safely. If you could bank, save that fat, you know, and then do the round two, now you're not paying for lipo, other things, the fat's already stored. You might be able to just do that in the office if you have the right setup in your office for office-based procedure. You know, fat transfer to the breast has always been challenging because you need multiple rounds. But now if you could do like a full body lipo and then just, you know, fat transfer to the isolated breast is something, again, you could do with a little sedation in the office, hour procedure, super easy to do stuff. So I think over the next year or two, it's going to be a huge, huge game changer. So we've been working with them. I'm probably one of the things I'm most excited about coming out in 24.
Me too. I am very excited about that. Whenever you have that in your office, I would love to come see it in action, see how it goes, see how it works.
I'll keep you posted. We'll definitely do an update about it for sure.
For sure. Whenever you have it up and running, you can come back and tell us about all the success you're having.
Thank you.
So that was it, Dr. Frankel. I won't take much more of your time, but before you leave, I do always have this one question that I like to ask. And that is, if you were talking to your sister or your friend, somebody close to you, and they're starting their plastic surgery journey, what's one piece of advice that you would give them?
Research your surgeon. I think that, and we do a ton of stuff on social media, but just because somebody has a million followers doesn't make them the right surgeon for you. So research them, you know, do a couple consultations, really take that part seriously because you want somebody that's going to be with you through that journey. Someone that really understands your vision, someone that you have a connection because look, nothing's perfect. There's always a chance, you know, you need a little TLC, you need some stuff to get through and you want to make sure that this is someone you feel connected with that you're going to go through that journey with.
Absolutely. I second that. And if my girls want to come see you, where can they find you?
Yeah, our website is austinplasticsurgeon.com. And then our Instagram is @austinplasticsurgeon. So DM us, come check out our website, and love to hear from all of you guys. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Franco, for being on the show. And I will see you guys next week.